Action.
I heartily endorse this event or product.
Fakeheads, what time is it?
This is the Bob and Jeff Show, starring Jeff Lutz.
Soak it in, boys and girls.
I know, so weird, but you know the heart wants what the heart wants.
And Jason Duda.
Soak it in.
Stop it! You people are supposed to be funny and wacky.
97.5 and 1240 KFH.
Showtime. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Are you ready?
Here we go.
Ready.
Good afternoon and welcome. It is Bob and Jeff on KFH on a Tuesday in the second week of July. Bob is out today, fresh off. I don't know how late he was up last night. I don't know what adult beverages he might have consumed. But Bob Lutz coming off his second straight League 42 division championship.
Oh, wow.
Can you believe it?
Well, yeah, I can believe it.
Two in a row, and he's calling it quits. He's taking the low road, the high road. He's taking some road. He's out of coaching. He's done.
Two in a row, he's John Elway in it. Is that what he's doing?
Last year, yes, that's what he's doing. I was reminded of a post that my dad put up last year when he won his quote-unquote first championship, and he was talking about he's never won a championship. Oh, no, I've never won a championship. And I don't know if he needs to be reminded that my summer league team won him several championships.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And he forgot.
We won leagues, we won states, we won districts.
You basically won everything.
We were second in the nation.
Oh, my God.
For him.
That good.
And this guy is whining about never winning a championship in a division, in a league.
It's embarrassing.
It is kind of embarrassing.
I'm embarrassed that he forgot about the championships before.
It must not have meant as much to him with his own son playing. Well, we know, we get that.
That's kind of what I was thinking, but I didn't want to say anything.
If I hadn't been on the team, he probably would really celebrate the championships that I won him. But it doesn't go that way.
It goes Bob's way.
Yeah, Bob is a two-time League 42 division champion.
There you go.
And we certainly are proud of him for that.
Absolutely.
Jason Duda, a fairly unfamiliar voice coming back to us. We had the big fella on.
Oh, yeah?
While you were gone, Anthony. We had David Michael Hahn.
Oh.
And Mike Furches hosting one of the shows with me.
Oh, jeez.
Just a nice little cavalcade of characters coming through the doors.
Yeah, the all-stars coming in.
And where was Jason Duda?
I was gone.
Not even on this country. I was about to say continent, but that wouldn't have been
right. That would have been a lie.
You would have been in. You were in this continent, but not in this country.
I was not. I was in the homeland.
Tell us about it.
68 to 72 degrees.
Nobody cares about the weather.
Oh, yes, they do. When you're
anybody
sitting
can
on
go
the,
inside.
When you're sitting on the deck and just looking at the ocean.
You know, it was nice this morning.
Which
we had
is
the window
like
open. It was beautiful.
50 feet away. Eagles flying around.
Eagles,
I mean,
huh?
Yeah, like real eagles. White heads and everything.
Wow.
Great big guys.
I thought they were our national bird. What are they doing up there?
There's tons of eagles on the island. Like,
Why do people use the weather as a way to rub it in?
Because when you come home and it's 100 degrees, it stinks.
Then move.
It stinks. So when you get a break for 10 days, it's great.
But why do people use that like I'm better than you because I was somewhere where the weather was?
You asked me how it was. The weather was great.
That's it?
Great.
That's all you're going to give us?
What else do you
want? You didn't bring any ketchup chips back. Or Cheesies or Coffee Crisps or whatever they're called. Is that what they're called?
Yeah, they're back.
Is that what they're called, though? Coffee Crisps?
Yeah. Those are the ones you guys liked.
Well, we liked all of them. I
didn't get any of the small ones, but I got a couple of the actual chocolate bars.
Did you get any all dressed?
They're terrible.
They are?
They're terrible.
Why?
Because they're terrible.
What are they dressed with?
Everything. All dressed.
I thought you liked everything. You're Mr. Everything.
Not in chips. Not in those.
That's unfortunate.
No. Hickory sticks. Brought some hickory sticks back.
I don't know what those are.
Oh, those are fantastic.
Are you going to bring us some Thursday?
I only got one bag, so I can't share those.
You have to just let us try them.
Yeah, but then that would be mean if I let you try a couple of those and not give you any more.
That's okay. We just want a sample. We believe that hickory sticks
are... Well, then I got to open the bag, and I got to eat all the stuff. Because we only travel with carry-ons. So we don't have a lot of room to bring a bag of chips back.
You should have driven.
No.
What's it like going across the border? What do you have to do? Just here's my citizenship.
Tell your passport. Tell
them
what's going on.
Yeah, I've done that.
See you later.
All right. Well, it doesn't sound like that much of an interesting trip. You didn't bring much of the food back. You're only talking about the weather.
Weather was great.
Did something happen on the trip that you don't want to talk about?
Weather was great.
Sounds like maybe there was some...
Nah, the ocean was good. The first few days were a little...
Did you not get along with the family?
Oh, the family was fantastic.
Everybody's good?
Lots of cards, lots of laughs. Family was great.
What's the go-to card game for the family?
Either 31 or crib.
31's a good one.
Yep. Or a lot of cribbage, too.
Cribbage, I don't play that one.
So that was a lot of the card games in the evenings after he would make dinner. The ocean was good. The first few days, like I said, it was kind of misty off and on, and the tides
were...
What
a loser you are, going to a place where the weather wasn't good.
The tides weren't working with us very good. So the last two or three days, the tides were perfect in the little cove we were in, and my son was in there swimming. He got a wetsuit. He was in there finding crabs and anything else that was floating around in there. It's good stuff.
Sounds like an amazing time.
Went and dug some clams or crab.
Yeah, you just
picked
said
up
that.
Some crabs on the back. Yeah, and then we dug for clams and oysters. And dug a 3-foot hole, three
what
by
do
three.
What with the crab?
Well, you just put them back.
Okay, thank goodness.
But it was probably,
I don't want to have to lecture you today.
It was a decent size. It was probably the size of my two hands together.
It's impressive.
That was a decent size.
That's kind of scary,
guy.
In fact.
Well, but he knows what he's doing, so he doesn't get pinched. Then we dug for clams. And that, you know what's nuts about the ocean? We dug a 3-foot by 3-foot hole, maybe a foot deep. We had 70 clams out of this little hole that we could eat.
You're allowed to dig on the ocean?
Yes.
That deep?
As long as you buy a fishery license for the day.
Okay.
Which cost $8.
Not bad. What's that Canadian, like $45?
No, it's $8 Canadian.
Oh, good.
It's like $5.50 American. So 3-by-3 hole, a foot deep, 70 clams, and probably 200 other ones that you don't eat. Then you find ghost shrimp, sea worms. In a 3-by-3 hole, it's just crazy what comes out. So you know the size of the ocean.
Big
ocean. Like, how much stuff is in there?
Well, what, I mean, doesn't...
How much stuff is in there?
Doesn't the size... of the earth just astound you when you think about it?
Well, think about that. It was a 3-by-3 hole, so it was maybe as big as a small dinner table.
Yeah, it was like a box, essentially.
And a foot down.
You basically opened a box of stuff.
And it was just like digging for treasure, finding this, finding that. And that was a 3-foot hole.
Yeah. How much
stuff is in the ocean?
So much stuff.
Like how much, Jeff?
It's like... Stop messing with the ocean. I don't know. I don't know how much stuff is in the ocean. A lot of stuff is in the ocean.
Well, I'm asking
you. Why don't you go do some research?
Come up with
about
an answer
this?
Once in a while.
Okay.
Like, I want to know how much stuff is in the ocean.
What are you talking about?
Because we found all this stuff in this little hole.
There are 5.25 trillion pieces of plastic debris in the ocean.
That's disgusting.
It is.
I didn't see one.
Well, it's down there. That's how big the ocean is.
So you go right to trash.
Well, that's what I typed in the ocean. Or in the search, how much stuff is in
the ocean. Not interested in the trash, Jeff.
What, animals?
Animals don't live in the ocean. Aren't they mammals?
What are you talking about?
What are you talking about?
Animals are mammals.
I'm running on zero sleep.
242.
Leave me alone.
242,000 known and described marine species living in the world's oceans.
There's more than that. The ocean's what? There's like 95% of the ocean hasn't been...
242,000 species.
Yeah, that's more than that. I found at least 6,000 in that little hole.
About 91% of ocean species have yet to be classified. So you're thinking that's only 9%.
Okay. So that's what, 5% of the ocean that's been explored?
Who knows?
So times that by 20.
Think about how...
Times that number by 20, Jeff.
Think about how deep you can go into the ocean that we haven't even...
That's what I'm saying. So that's how many they know of, and we've only explored about 5% of the ocean. So times it by 20, And that's how many species are out there. Let's just be honest. We haven't got to them all.
How much of the ocean has been
explored? The megalodon.
5%.
I'm sure the megalodon is still there. Huh?
How'd you know that only 5% of the ocean has been explored?
Well, I'm not as dumb as you think I am.
But why did you know that? I'm not saying you're dumb.
I just knew that. I don't know how I knew that, but I knew that.
95% of our ocean is unknown. And that covers 70% of the Earth's surface.
Yeah.
So we've essentially do
not
that.
Not even
math.
Half. Yeah, we haven't even covered half of
we
the Earth's surface.
We haven't even covered, like, it's 20% of the Earth's of the Earth.
Not even close.
Surface is different than depth. See, that's where you were wrong.
No, the surface is included in the bottom.
No, the surface of the ocean.
Surface.
Could be the
what
front.
About Megalodon? You know he's out there.
I don't know what that is.
That's the biggest shark in the world.
Is that a real thing?
Supposedly went extinct. Megalodon?
Is there...
You've never heard of a megalodon?
It's an extinct species of giant mackerel shark that lived 23 to 3.6 million years ago. Allegedly.
Allegedly. But we haven't come close to 95% of the ocean, so we're just assuming it's gone.
What is the...
It's like a 50-foot shark.
That's crazy. 40,000 pounds of bite force per square inch.
Yeah, good luck getting out of that one.
I don't think I would.
No.
What killed the megalodon? Competition with great white sharks? How did the megalodon lose to the great
There's
white?
There's no way. That
if the megalodon
couldn't have been.
Is
that's
a loser.
That's why the megalodon has got to be still around. And I believe
no,
that.
No, the megalodon was a loser.
No, he's still kicking. He's just living way down deep in the ocean. There's a bunch of them down there just hanging out. Guaranteed.
Studies of fossilized megalodon and great white teeth show that their diets overlapped. And they couldn't beat the great white to the food.
Well, that could be possible.
Do you want to know anything else?
Yeah.
About the megalodon?
Yeah. Where does it say that they're still kicking? Because I know they're around.
Almost all fossil remains of megalodon are teeth.
I thought I saw one, to tell you the truth.
Well, you should have brought it home.
Well, I tried to
Would
catch him.
Would they allow that over the border?
I tried to catch him with my little fishing rod, 20-pound test. I don't know if I'd have held on to him, though.
The megalodon was adapted to warm tropical and subtropical. This is wild. This is wild to me.
What?
That stuff that exists now existed millions and millions and millions of years ago. There was this water then that is still here now.
Yeah.
And will be here long after.
We're gone.
Everybody's gone.
Probably.
It's crazy.
And so you're telling me the megalodon can't still be alive?
The megalodon's gone.
No, it's not. That's a farce.
Let's get Quint to catch him.
Who's Quint?
From Jaws. He'll find him for $5.
See?
But he'll kill him for $10.
He's a good player. Old Quint.
What did Megalodon look like?
It was a shark. It was just big shark.
No, I'm asking the question that's in this article. And that's not.
If he lived that long ago, they would know. There's no pictures of it.
Exactly.
Megalodon would have eaten meat, most likely whales and large fish, and probably other sharks.
Yes.
Man, and that thing went extinct.
I don't think it's extinct.
That tells you just about anything can go extinct.
I don't think it's extinct. I think it's still around. I think there's a few kicking around down there in the bottom of about 3
Just
miles
Just because you
deep.
Watched the Meg a few years ago?
Oh, no, I've thought this
the
for
ocean's
years.
Deep.
It's very deep.
That's the thing that probably ate that sub that went down to look at the Titanic.
See?
It could be.
Well,
I bet there would be some evidence of that if it had happened.
How? What evidence?
Didn't they have like cameras down
chomp,
there and stuff?
Eat, gone, tummy. See ya.
I don't know. I don't have the answer.
Megalodon's alive.
Why don't you go see a great white shark?
Oh, we saw some orcas. Were right in that bay. That was pretty cool.
But I'm asking you,
they got
why
those
don't
big
you
fins
go
and
check out a great
they were
white.
Just there was like 3 or 4 of them that were just kind of playing around. It was pretty cool, man.
They're angry dolphins on.
Oh yeah. You don't want to. I'm not good. Trust me. I'm not stupid enough to be like, hey, let's go jump in and see what's happening. No, that sounds like a great idea, Max. So we did see a few
pounds of force per square inch for the great white shark bite. Is this doing anything for you?
Yeah.
This conversation?
It's just making me feel more confident about me thinking the Megalodon's still kicking.
That's amazing.
Yeah, because every now and then they find an animal that they thought was extinct.
Exactly.
I just found something.
Oh, geez, he's still around.
That was long gone.
Well, he didn't swim up to the shore, so I could just look at him really easy. What do you think? Megalodon's going to come and say hi? No, he's not.
Here are 10 animals once presumed extinct. You ready for this?
Yeah. Megalodon, number one.
Victorian grassland earless dragon.
Okay.
You ever seen one of those?
No.
The coelacanth. That's a fish. They came back from extinction. Some of these animals are very cute, and it makes me, it breaks my heart that some of these animals went extinct. Or even that a terror skink.
Yeah, I don't know what any of these are, man. Is there any fish that they're talking about in there? We're talking about Megalodon right now.
I just told you.
Not a dragon grass eating thing.
I just told you there's a fish in there, the coelacanth.
And all this chasing dirt is clam bake.
That's right. Dug a hole and look where we're at. We're going down it in a hurry.
These ancient fish were thought to have become extinct at the end of the Cretaceous period, some 66 million years ago. However, much to everyone's surprise, a live specimen was brought up from the depths by a local fisherman off the coast of South Africa in what year?
96.
1938.
38.
That's 66 million years later.
And so you think that it just showed up, or they've always been around?
I don't know.
They've always been around. They didn't just all of a sudden appear again.
I don't know how it happened.
Well, I'm telling you how it happened. Wait till they pull up Megalodon.
It's the serendipitous discovery is now considered to be one of the most important zoological findings of the 20th century.
What about mermaids? They're still kicking too, I bet.
Stop it.
They just want nothing to do with us.
See, we take
they're smart.
We take
they're
something
in the
serious.
Bottom of the sea, and they're like, I don't want nothing to do with those people on top.
We take
we're
something
staying down here.
And educational.
And they're probably talking to the megalodons, and they're like, yeah, they're a bunch of idiots up there.
And
that's exactly what's going
it.
On.
And you ruin it.
I didn't ruin it.
We take something that was educational, that people were learning from, and you have to make a mockery out
it's
of it.
It's no mockery, Jeff. It's just the truth.
Speaking of
unbelievable.
Mermaids, did you see Pam Anderson roaming around?
No, we went down a walk down Lady Smith and Shemanis. We never saw Pam, so disappointing for her that she didn't get to meet us, but it's all right.
I'm going to set up the show because we have to go to a break here in just
well, let's set it up, and then I want to talk about Megalodon again.
Well, we might be able to. We might not.
Well, we'll see what happens.
There's stuff I want to talk about at
yeah,
the top of the
stuff,
hour.
Yeah, but your stuff, it doesn't matter right now.
At 225, Zach Bush, the coach of the Aftershocks. I tried to get two new players from the Aftershocks on, and I thought I was going to get neither of them. So I said, hey, Zach, why don't you just come on? So he's going to come on. But then after I booked Zach Bush to come on, after I thought the new players weren't going to come on, see what I'm doing here?
Yeah.
Are you connecting these dots?
Yeah.
Jeremiah Martin, one of the new Aftershocks players who played at the University of Memphis, is going to join us at 2:45. So some Aftershock stuff today.
With the guy from Memphis.
Yeah. Did you know, Jason, and I'll ask Zach about this because people want answers. There are more, double the number of players on the Aftershocks who never played at Wichita State than those who played at Wichita State for their entire career.
Yes, I would like to know why.
We need to do something about
that. Well, you know what? We could ask this guy. I'm sure Zach probably knows.
Well, I mean, we have Connor Francamp, right, who didn't play as – we have Shockers, right?
Yeah.
Francamp, Daryl Willis didn't play his whole collegiate career. There are others.
So I'm guessing this is just, you know, they're calling the Shocks, but – it's not really just Shocks.
Do you know the only two Aftershocks who played their entire collegiate careers at Wichita State?
Fred VanVleet?
He's not on the Aftershocks, no.
Ron Baker?
No.
Well, he should be. Come on, Ron, get out there, kid.
The two mainstays.
Get out there.
Rashard Kelly and Marcus McDuffie. We'll take a break right now. We'll come back and talk to the head coach and general manager of the Aftershocks, a former Shocker himself, recently married.
Really?
Yeah.
Good for him.
It's so, Zach Bush.
And Megalodon in the next hour.
I don't know, maybe. We'll see.
Oh, yeah.
I've got stuff I need to talk about.
Well, okay, so, we'll see.
So if you want to talk Megalodon, you need to bring something about, because that was just me talking about Megalodon, and you saying, well, they must exist.
They do exist.
So if you want to talk...
That's going to be my first question to every guest we have today.
If you want to talk Megalodon at 3 o'clock, bring something to the table. Stay with us, Jason Duda, Jeff Lutz, with Bob and Jeff on KF8.
Megalodon.
This is the Bob and Jeff Show.
Let's go to the IHOP hotline and talk to the head coach of the Aftershocks. His name is Zach Bush. Zach, how are you?
I'm good, guys. How are you? But I'm a little confused. No Bob. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this today.
Well, if you want to hang up, Jason, yeah, that's fine. Jason and I handled the first segment with perfection. So, I mean, it's your decision, Zach. Do what you got to do.
If you're busy, Zach, and you got to go do stuff, man, hey, happy days, buddy.
You know what? All right. You know what? Fine. Let's go ahead and do it.
All right. We might as well. Aftershocks begin play July 20th, noon start. It is a Saturday, Zach, but a noon start? What's up with that?
Believe me, I didn't love it either. The deal with that is, you know, TBT needs TV times. The best TV slot for that day was at noon, so that was with their decision for putting us at noon to get us on FS1. I put up as much of a fight as I could have. I wasn't happy about it either. And I know the guys, once they hear about that, won't be thrilled, because if there's anything 28-year-old men love, it's getting up early in the morning and playing basketball instead of playing at 7 o'clock like they're used to.
Especially after a Friday night. I mean, you just wasted the whole weekend.
Yep, exactly. You get it.
Yeah, well, I've been there, so just in a different sport. Zach, tell us about the roster a little bit here. Jeff and I were talking, you know, we got a lot more other players than Aftershocks this year. Just give us a little rundown on how this whole thing came about.
Yeah, we like our group this year. I know I feel like I say that every year, but this is a group we're really excited about. It always starts with that core alumni group, because if we don't have them, we're not, you know, playing. We're not an alumni team. So we always build around that. And that typically has been Connor, Marcus McDuffie, Rashard, Daryl Willis. We missed Rashard last year quite a bit. He was unable to, but thankfully we'll have him this year. He'll miss the first game because his mom's getting married back out in Virginia, so nice. He'll be out there for that.
Well, but if it's a noon start, though, can he get here and get back for the wedding?
Right. We didn't think about that. You know, we might have to look into some flights. But no, we have that same core group of guys, and then you add in Altari Gilbert and Trey Wade. We're excited about those two. I think Trey's kind of a Rashard type mold, where he does a little bit of everything. And then Altariq ended up getting hurt last year early on in our practices, so thankfully he's healthy this year. We're excited to get him out there. And then some other pieces that aren't alumni. We got Caleb Walker back, who played last year, and fans might remember that he was a Hutch High kid and then played at Butler. So he's got local ties, and then finished up in Nebraska. But he's coming off a great season. He played in the same league that Rashard Kelly did in France, and then actually played on the same team that Frank Mason played on. And Frank's going to be playing with the KU group. So funny connection there. Jordan Parks, who played with us, is back. And then we added two new guys. So Jeremiah Martin, Wichita State fans might remember, he kind of terrorized us in the game with Beale Street Boys last year. So we figured we'd stop battling him and add him to the mix. Just a really solid combo guard that can give us some flexibility, both scoring and, you know, initiating offense. And then a big man, Jabari Narcisse. Big men are like diamonds. They are, I guess maybe not diamonds, something even more rare. It seems like this was the most impossible year ever to find big men. But fortunately, we found one that we think is going to be pretty good.
That's like finding a megalodon right there.
Exactly.
Oh, boy. Zach Bush, our guest, he's the coach and general manager for the Aftershocks. So, yeah, college basketball and college sports in general are changing a lot, and this TBT is going to evolve. You know, it's not like Rashard Kelly's aging out or Marcus McDuffie, but, you know, there's so many transfers into Wichita State. There's so many transfers out of Wichita State. Does it become tougher to find guys who want to align themselves with Wichita State University? Does that make sense? Like, you know, Jamarius Burton, he was a shocker, and he was a really good shocker. Is that a guy you talk to? Is that a guy who wants to distance himself from being a shocker? How do these all conversations go?
Yeah, I think it's a great point you bring up, because it's something we both talk about, you know, with JR and Garrett and I, of when we're trying to form the team. First off, you know, how do they view themselves? Do they view themselves as, you know, even though they may have left, do they still have shocker blood in them? Or are they, you know, like you said, distancing themselves? Fortunately for us, pretty much every conversation we've had with guys isn't that way. Although their time here may have ended, it's almost unanimous that, you know, from a fan perspective and just the way that the fans treated them and just their experience as a quote-unquote shocker is pretty positive almost all the way around. Then you obviously add in the ability to compete with guys who are friends. To them, that always helps. So it's different guy to guy. I won't say it's the same for every single guy, but we've certainly had conversations with guys who have ended up, you know, transferring. Like Trey Wade's the perfect example. You know, situation kind of changed for him, and he ended up at Arkansas, but he still loves Wichita State. He loves the school, loves the fans, and there's a reason why guys come back here. But it is something where I think it's changed a little bit from, you know, maybe my generation, that last group that kind of came through before the transfer portal era started and all of this, you know, kind of went down the road it's gone. But I don't want to say we bled it a little bit more than they did, but I think we certainly had a little bit more of an attachment to our university and to our program more than anything. And so I don't know if guys are going to continue to have that, and that does make it tough, especially when you want to attract players that fans have an attachment to. Because at the end of the day, if the fans aren't going to come, there's no reason for TBT to come back. So that's probably the biggest concern, is finding guys that the fans have an attachment to and would like to see come back.
Well, and with that, how many guys did you reach out to that didn't come back? Or the guys that you wanted to come back that you didn't? Like, how long was this list that you guys had? And obviously some guys have other commitments and they can't do it and that sort of thing. But how many guys did you guys actually have to go through and talk to in order to make the roster?
Yeah, fortunately, that core group of Rashard, Connor, Marcus, you know, Daryl, they're all in. Trey, he's all in. Al-Tariq, but so that helps. You kind of got your solid foundation. But from there were certainly guys that we wanted, you know, like Dexter Dennis, and his was just more of this year had a little bit of a dynamic where there was summer league going on and he just wouldn't be able to make it in time, but there was certainly interest. So, you know, a guy like that who did play 4 years here, transferred, played at A&M, you know, it's a good example of a guy still having a lot of love for this place and being open to coming back. But yeah, we probably went through, I won't give exact names just because I don't want to put guys.
No, I don't want names, there, but just kind of numbers.
Yeah, probably, I would say probably 4 to 6 guys that we talked to, and whether it was different obligations or just not really being interested, just for the sake of a lot of them, I think it's they spend so much time away. I know it's easy for us as fans to be like, why would you want to come back here for, you know, 2 weeks? But when they live across the water for 9 to 10 months, 2 weeks is, you know, a big chunk of the summer when it's time they get to spend with family. So I get it, as frustrating as it may be. So, you know, someone like Joe Ragland, I'll just give you a name. Like we've tried to get Joe year after year because he's such a high level player, and he's a veteran overseas. His career has been tremendous, but some guys it's hard, man. We keep knocking on that door, and maybe one day we'll get him.
And Dexter, you mentioned he's a guy kind of with the, like you said, he's a summer league kind of on the precipice of the NBA. He had an 18-point game last year, which I don't know if a lot of people know, but that's pretty impressive with Dallas.
Yeah, there's guys absolutely like him, Craig Porter, and then you know, I would even say Ricky Council. You know, three guys who fortunate to have, you know, good relationships with through myself and through my younger brother Bryson. You know, knowing them, they're awesome dudes, and we would love to have them. And it's great for them, selfishly for us. I would never say I wouldn't, you know, obviously want them to make it in the NBA. I want them to have, you know, the best career possible, and so would love for them to make it. But, you know, those are guys we would love to have if it, you know, somehow didn't work out in the league. And they were kind of that last, I would put them in that category of almost the last generation, you know, when that transfer portal was starting. So it's definitely a different wave now of guys, and hopefully we see more guys at Wichita State stick around for, you know, 3-4 years and not 1 and 2. And hopefully this is a good sign, because Coach Mills retained a lot of last year's group, and I know they're excited about that.
So there's like a thing, I don't know if it's between Wichita and Louisville necessarily, but Louisville's trying really hard to get that attendance record. They're the host city that has, you know, some of the other top 10 attendances in the TBT history. It's basically Wichita and Louisville. Have you heard about that? Are you, what is Wichita perhaps doing to make sure that doesn't happen?
Yeah, absolutely. It's something we're keeping an eye on. We take a lot of pride in that, you know, that we've had the best fans, and it's always fun for me to say that when we're recruiting guys, whether they're, you know, alumni guys or those last couple guys that aren't. I love throwing that out there that, you know, hey, this is already awesome. You're getting a chance to win $1 million. You're playing with your buddies. And then on top of it, it's far and away the best environment, and the ticket sales numbers prove that, and the attendance records prove that. And so we're keeping an eye on it. I'm always checking that number every day. Just trying to, you know, communicate out there to fans that we need them, how important they are. Trying to work with TBT on promotional ideas, getting the players to reach out via social media. But, you know, I think it always takes care of itself. Our fans just like good basketball. This year is going to be, you know, I think better than in past years, because the KU group and the K-State group are bringing probably their most competitive teams. KU group, like I said, bringing Frank Mason in, who was a national player of the year in college, having a really solid European career, Thomas Robinson, you know, fan favorites like that. And then with K-State, you got Jacob Pullen back, you got Barry Brown, you know, Xavier Sneed, these different guys that made great tournament runs for K-State. So I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And every year it seems to pick up, and that momentum kind of builds when everybody sees the games, they're back in town and back on TV, and each round gets a little bit better. So, you know, we hope that continues.
Zach, I got to ask you, with the everything going on currently in the college basketball, what are your thoughts with everybody transferring, the NIL and everything? Because it has got to be so hard to just build a program right now with the way things are. It makes it tough on you, but it's awful for the fans because they don't know anybody that's coming back. I'm just curious on your opinion on everything.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard in a sense. You know, if you put yourself in those player shoes, I think, you know, if we all, you know, kind of put our initial, whatever we think, our bias aside, and we put ourselves in their shoes, it would be hard not to, you know, take what's being given to them. When you're 18 years old and you have the ability to suddenly make money or, you know, find different situations, and I'm not saying they're always correct. You know, I think there is, you know, kind of an issue with kids facing adversity and seeming to immediately just change schools instead of staying and fighting through that, and that kind of building character and making you into a man. Not saying necessarily that's correct, but as far as the money, it's hard to say that, you know, these kids shouldn't take the opportunities that are presented to them. I completely get on the other side, the fan perspective. It's hard. We're, it seems like, in a kind of a no-win situation, and I think Pandora's box has been opened a little bit. I think the NCAA made a huge mistake in the way they went about things. You know, change was obviously coming with just the lawsuits that were going on and the NIL space. But the way they opened it up and then offered no guidance, and I think it just became the Wild West. And it was almost worse than it was before, with you knew bigger schools, you know, you would see stories and there would be, you know, NCAA investigations that would come out of, you know, guys, whether it was being funded through shoe deal or shoe companies and AAU, all that, like kids were getting stuff. But now it's almost worse that it's all out there, because you have obviously these different schools that have so many more resources than, you know, the mid and low majors. And so I think it was just bound the way they opened it up to end up like it is today. I get where fans are coming from. It's frustrating. I think all you can hope for is that in the coming years, you know, something will change. There'll be some structure that's implemented. But not, you know, I feel for fans. It's not fun. I remember growing up, you know, I was a WSU and a KU guy. And if Jamar Howard had, you know, transferred after his sophomore year, I probably would have never heard of him. It wouldn't have been a fan, or Fridge Holm and guys like that. So it's definitely different. I don't know what the right answer is. I think there's, you know, people that are making a lot more money than me that are going to have to make those decisions. But obviously something has to change, because it's not working for fans. It's not working for coaches. Building a program now is harder than it's ever been. And they have a choice but to adapt right now. But I guarantee, you know, they're hoping for some change.
Zach Bush, the coach and general manager of the Aftershocks, final moments. You got married recently. Congratulations on that. You're still coaching out in up in Omaha, I guess. What is the school year looking like for you and I guess the rest of this calendar year?
Man, I'm in enemy territory up here. I'm in Blue Jay country. My wife's coaching at Creighton. I got to hear all about them all the time. I remind them as much as I can about, you know, Wichita State. But now I'm excited. Coming off a great high school season, I'm at Bellevue West. We went 27-1 and won a state championship in what would be the equivalent of 6A. It's called Class A up here. So at a great program, great school, love teaching there. So, you know, just excited for TBT. And obviously the teacher, I'm trying to stretch this summer out as long as I can. You know, I'm not wanting to think about the classroom and getting back there. But it's a good place, and I'm just excited to get back to Wichita, see family, see all the fans. There's just nothing like that experience every summer.
Yep, awesome. Looking forward to seeing you back in the Roundhouse again here in about 11 days. So be safe, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks, guys. Good to talk to you.
Thanks a lot. Zach Bush.
There he goes.
Pretty insightful stuff, as always, from Zach Bush.
That he is. I like it.
We'll take a break right now, come back and talk with one of the Aftershocks, one of their new players, Jeremiah Martin, who played, as Zach mentioned, last year for the Memphis alumni team, which I don't think is in the tournament this year. I don't know why he would change if they were, right?
I don't know.
We just talked to the coach of the Aftershocks. Now we're going to talk to one of the players, one of the new players, Jeremiah Martin, who played his college basketball at Memphis and was outstanding at Memphis. Jeremiah, how are you?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
We're doing well. So you played last year with Beale Street. You obviously had some games against Wichita State when you were at Memphis. So how did it come together that you are now wearing the colors of Wichita State?
I had just got a call and just asked me, was I interested in playing? And, I mean, I thought about it for like a few days, but I told him I was interested in playing with Aftershock because, I mean, this season, because I think Beale Street's having a team this year. And this is how I came together.
Is it going to be tough for you when you put on the jersey to go the right way? Because you always want to be scoring on the guys wearing black and gold?
I'm just going out there to just have fun, play basketball, and try to win it all.
Hey, Jeremiah, give us a little rundown on everything that's been going on. Obviously, you've been playing in Europe. How's that going? How have you enjoyed it? Just give everybody here in Wichita a little rundown since you left Memphis.
Since I left Memphis, it's been up and down, basically, but it's been good. I got a chance to, you know, play in the G League and got some games in the NBA. And then once that didn't work out, I went overseas, and I didn't play in a couple of countries, Poland, Australia, Germany, and this past year, and this year coming up, I'll be playing in Russia.
Jeremiah Martin, our guest, he's the newest member of the Aftershocks out of Memphis. You played 18 total games in the NBA. You actually played pretty well. Is that an opportunity that could make itself known again for you? Is that something that the door is still open in your mind? And what was that like getting that time in the NBA?
For sure, the door is always open in my mind. But, I mean, I'm just going with where whoever wants me. Well, I mean, if the opportunity ever came again, I'd be definitely ready. And the time spent in the NBA was good. Because, you know, it's so hard to get there, hard to play games, hard to, you know, it's the best league in the world. So, I mean, just was a total dream come true.
What is the biggest difference? I mean, obviously, that there's a little more talent and that sort of thing in the NBA compared to college or even in Europe. What's that one intangible that makes those guys in the NBA as good as they are?
They're skilled. I mean, they're skilled. Everybody athletic. I mean, you see it every day. I don't know the answer to that. It's all still basketball, but I mean, the guys are very, very skilled.
What's the favorite place you've seen or your favorite attraction maybe overseas? Like you said, you've gotten to play a lot of different places. So what have you seen in the world? What's it been like to travel the world?
It's been great because I played European competition. I played in the Euro Cup last year when I played in Poland, well, the year before last when I played in Poland, and I was able just to go to those different countries and just go able to see the different cultures and, you know, the different lifestyles. So I think that's kind of the best thing to be, like, overseas. You just be able to see so much, so many different places that you probably never thought you would see in your life.
Jeremiah Martin, our guest from the Aftershock. So tell us about your time at Memphis, because you played, I believe, for Tubby Smith originally, right? He was there your first 3 years or two? You played for three coaches.
I played with Josh Pastner and Tubby Smith, and last coach was Penny.
Yeah, and then Penny. So what was that like? You sign on with Josh. You end up playing for Tubby Smith, who is a national championship winning coach, and then play for a legend in the game in Penny Hardaway. So had to be a little bit of a whirlwind for you.
Oh yeah, most definitely. But I mean, I think it was great. It was good. I was able to, you know, learn things, learn how to adjust to different situations, different environments, different coaches, different everything. So, I mean, it was good. But, I mean, all those guys did a good job. You know, I had, I learned something from all those guys while they was there. It was good.
What do you think of the program now at Memphis? It gets a lot of criticism, I guess. I don't know if that's the right word, not getting to the NCAA tournament in spite of all the talent. Do you feel like Penny's the right guy there? Do you feel like they need to take a new approach of building the roster? Or do you think it's just a matter of time before they really get it going?
Yeah, I think he's good. Penny doing a good job there. NYC, like this season, we got to top 10 in the country. That's very hard to do, no matter what school you're at. And, I mean, it just takes time. They're going in with the right mindset every year, and they're winning. But, I mean, sometimes it don't work out, but, I mean, they'll be good.
So tell us about your plans for, you know, you have 11 days till the Aftershocks play July 20th. The first game. What are you doing between now and then? When are you getting to Wichita, and how else are you kind of preparing for this?
I'll be in Wichita next week. Just working out and, you know, getting some reps in. I mean, I'm getting ready for this, but also I'm still getting ready for, you know, my season, this upcoming season. So I feel like it's just, you know, it's good to be able to go play guys, play in real games, because, I mean, the real season starts, like, in August, so, I mean, it's all just good, but just working out, just being ready, staying in shape.
I don't know if you know, but your first game is Saturday at noon. Do you like the noon tip-off, or would you rather play in the evening, or does it make a big difference to your preparation?
No, it don't make a difference. I just want to play, no matter what time it is. I think I'm kind of used to the different time zones and playing in different times now, because we'd be overseas. And the time difference. So, I mean, he's just trying to tip off. He's trying to win.
No doubt. Well, Jeremiah, you're a great get for the Aftershocks. You scored over 1,600 points at Memphis. You played in the NBA. You've had a successful career overseas. So, really looking forward to you. We've seen you play. Now we're just looking forward to seeing you play for the home team this time.
Not for sure. I appreciate the opportunity, and I'm excited to be down there, bring my family down there to come down there and see the games, and just excited to be a part of this and just ready to go.
Absolutely. We'll see you on the court July 20th. Be safe until then.
I appreciate you.
Thanks a lot. That's a guy.
It is a guy.
1,600 points at Memphis.
Yeah, that's not bad.
That's not 1,600 points at Bozeman State. You know what I'm saying?
No, I
do. Is there a Bozeman State?
I do. Did you ever have 1,600 points in your high school,
I mean,
middle
you
school
them all
career?
Together,
you can't probably, count. Yeah. Can't count practices.
Why not?
No, you can't do that.
I mean, I played Biddy for a long time. I played middle school basketball. I played high school for a couple years. I bet I scored upwards of 2,000-3,000 points.
Oh, jeez, what a player!
Probably, right?
Man, I can't. I just missed. I missed getting to see ya.
Don't you
know?
Wish you knew how many points you scored in your career in basketball? Well, that would be amazing to know. Also, my lifetime batting average. I wish I knew that.
What do you think it is? 245, 275?
No, 312.
312?
Yeah, about around there.
Good player.
I don't know. I think it's probably pretty high. There were some years I was hitting over 400.
Whoa. Oh.
I hit 412 as a senior.
Well, that's
I
not
remember
bad.
That. I was at 290 as a junior in Ohio. I don't know.
Only 290? What?
It was a bad year. I turned it on at the end and saved it, but.
Well, thank goodness for that.
Yeah.
That could have been an ugly season.
It was not
ugly.
I was benched for a couple games.
No.
Yeah.
I didn't know. Sat you down.
I didn't know I was going to get my spot back.
And then you did.
I was benched during a game.
No way.
Yeah. It was,
why?
It was ugly.
Swinging at some bad pitches.
They thought I didn't run after a fly ball.
Well, and that's probably true to some degree.
I couldn't
right?
see it. And then the next guy that came, it was a doubleheader. The next guy played the next game. And he lost the ball in the sky, too, and they put me back in because, oh, I wasn't lying. And then I hit a double off the wall. Let's go to break. Hour number two coming up. We might have a game, maybe. Do you want to come up with a game? Probably
it's
not.
It's Tuesday.
I know. I don't like coming. It's hard
well,
to come
Well, neither
up.
Do I. And I'm coming in Friday, so I've already – that's the one thing that's bugging me already, and it's Tuesday.
It's hard to come up with games for you.
Why?
Because I don't know what you know. And
I don't know anything.
I don't want to expose you.
Oh, expose me. Does it really bother me?
It bothers me.
It doesn't bother me.
I don't want to be mean to people. Do I?
I don't know. You ever hear yourself in the three-man booth in the games?
Yeah, well,
you're
I
not.
Have.
You have no problem being mean.
Well, I have to sometimes.
Well, then, don't worry about it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, stay with us. Hour number two of Bob and Jeff coming right up.